Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Dr. David Nabarro is the World Health Organization's special envoy on COVID-19 and he joins me on the line now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire. How do you do?
I'm good. Hello. I'm good. Thank you for joining us once again on the programme. I'm not sure if you heard our last item or even a little snippet of it there. That big concert, 5,000 people in Barcelona.
Yes.
Does that make you nervous or are you okay with it going ahead with testing?
It makes me really happy that we've got all over the world now people working out how they're going to live their lives like they want to live them, whilst at the same time keeping safe in the face of this constant threat from the virus. So I am just really happy. I love it when I hear of these kinds of experiments underway. And I am hopeful that as humanity, we are going to work out during 2021 how we do continue life whilst at the same time stay safe.
Okay, that's interesting. And so we've got to work out ways to get on with it with this virus in the background.
Absolutely. You see, nobody else is able to do this. You know, governments will help us, but in the end, it's people. Businesses will help us, but it's people. Police will help us, but it's the people. Actually, at the heart of what we're dealing with at the moment is this thing that you've always said, Claire, on your show, which is it's about people and people working out how to deal with it and finding the best way to stay safe. So I love it. I'm really pleased.
And you know that we're getting ready to hear about an easing of restrictions. We believe it's going to be very careful and very tentative tomorrow. Mm-hmm. How careful, given the case numbers here, do we need to be in Ireland?
Well, certainly everybody needs to be careful. And I was thinking this morning, preparing for this interview, what do I mean by being careful? And the answer is, I mean just thinking at all times about whether or not we're making it easy for the virus to come along and get us and make us sick. And so it's what steps can we take to just hold the virus back? And that's where the distance that we maintain from other people really does matter. And going up close because we love somebody, or going up close because we're hard of hearing, or going up close because we're dealing with a piece of detail, we're dealing with a pattern and we want to try to get it right. All that going up close stuff, although it might seem to be perfectly harmless, that's where we get the infection. And that's why we've got to keep the masks on, and we've also got to keep the hygiene up, and we've got to keep isolating. But most importantly, it is being a bit thoughtful before we get up close. It doesn't feel natural, but that's what we've got to do, Claire.
Because I'm sure you're aware, you know, non-essential retail is closed here. Construction in the main is closed, trying to get the schools back open. There are very stringent restrictions still, and it doesn't seem, going back to what we were saying earlier about living with COVID, we're not quite there yet in this country.
Not yet, no, not yet. But, you know, small steps with the direction in mind is what we have to do. We have to feel our way, and if something goes wrong, we have to be ready to go back. Just the thing I would say to everybody, and Claire, you connect with so many people through your show, so I want to say it very directly now, it is this. We might be bored of the virus, but the virus is not bored of us. Because the virus is single-minded. It just wants to multiply and spread. And so we're bored because it's messing up our lives. But just remember that the virus thrives on us letting down our defenses. That's when the virus actually starts to spread. And that's what we've got to look out for. So I'm going to say to everybody in Ireland, hold on, keep it up. You've done great. But don't stop now just because it's coming up to the summer and everybody wants to get out and have fun. please go on treating with this virus with respect, because it's horrible.
As more of our vulnerable become vaccinated, David, does it follow then that daily case numbers become less relevant because we're mitigating against serious illness and death?
Absolutely. Daily case numbers are not the primary variable we need to look at. It's who's getting ill, where they're getting ill, and how they're getting cared for. So, for example, if the pattern of illness shifts and we've got more and more younger people getting ill, that probably means the vaccine is protecting older people and younger people are now kind of becoming the more dominant community. Where they're getting ill, we've got to keep a lookout for whether there are particular places in the community, like residential care or like particular kinds of factories, where there is a higher risk. And lastly, most importantly, is what's happening to them when they get diagnosed. Are they getting the treatment they need, and are they actually responding to that treatment? These are the kind of pieces of information that the authorities will be looking at. They'll be looking at it county by county and then for the country as a whole. But that's what it takes. It's looking at the capacity to respond that becomes the central feature of where we are right now.
Mm-hmm. And what about a vaccine bonus for those who have had their two shots?
Well, it's going to be quite a big bonus. What will happen over time is that people who've had their two shots will find themselves getting sort of a bypass entry into venues. They will find themselves more easily able to travel. And they might find themselves also more welcome in certain countries than others. And that's, unfortunately for me, a reality. I had hoped that we weren't going to end up where vaccine status was going to make a big difference, but I think it will, at least at the beginning. What I'm really hopeful for in the longer term is that we'll move beyond whether people have got vaccine certificates, and we'll be able to say, you come from Ireland, you're welcome, because Ireland is a country that takes this virus seriously and has got really good defence mechanisms in place. So we'll let you in because you come from Ireland, not because you've got a piece of paper or something like that. That's what I hope it'll get to in the end.
Well, the last time we spoke, you were quite hopeful, weren't you, about a summer with some degree of international travel, certainly within Europe. Are you really?
Yeah, I still am. Some degree. I mean, my problem is, will we get to a point, for example, where authorities in Spain will be able to talk very seriously to authorities in Ireland about whether or not there is evidence that the risks both in Spain and in Ireland are the same, and the response capacity in Spain and in Ireland is about the same? Because then when we get that equalization of risk and response capacity, then it makes absolute sense to set up an air bridge. But when it's very different, then it becomes more difficult. So I'm still hopeful that these kinds of discussions will happen and that there will be places that Irish people can travel to for the summer. May not be everywhere, because it'll depend hugely on what's going on in different parts of Europe. But I believe there will be some places, and I'm hopeful for that.
So you'd need the strategy around how to handle COVID, a match there between countries, but also you would need the vaccine rollout to be pretty much on a par, wouldn't you?
I would. It's just that at the moment, in many countries, the amount of vaccine that's rolling out is not enough to actually dent the pandemic. At the moment, the vaccine is great for reducing the number of people who are dying, but the vaccine rollout is not enough to stop the spread. We're still not up at a high enough percentage of the population covered. I think it's a few more months before we really will be able to start looking at each other and saying, we got enough vaccine to stop the spread of this virus. Usually we say you've got to have about 70% of the population vaccinated for the actual vaccination itself to be able to really damp down the pandemic. And that's where we're all hoping to get to. And I think it'll come in Europe in the second half of 2021. And in the world as a whole, it'll be a bit longer.
Having said that, though, are you concerned about how the vaccines deal with variants? There's evidence, isn't there, that there's lower efficacy against the South African variant, certainly when it comes to AstraZeneca.
Well, each vaccine has a slightly different profile when it comes to dealing with virus variants. And so that means that looking ahead, the job for people in the World Health Organization is to be able to really look at the world and see it as a big mosaic, a mosaic where you've got variants emerging in different places, and you've got vaccines of different kinds being administered in different places, sometimes several vaccines in one country. So what one really needs is to know where different vaccines are being given, where different variants are emerging, and then you identify the potential hotspots where you think you're going to get a re-emergence of disease because a variant is able to beat the protection offered by a vaccine. It's going to be a little complicated, Claire, but that's why we have a World Health Organization, and that's why we exist, is to be able to tell the world what's going on in different places and to interpret what's happening to people. Even though it's complex, I think your listeners need to be able to say to each other, well, that bloke from WHO, he seemed to know what he was talking about. That means that the WHO is keeping an eye on things. That gives us a bit of confidence. And that's my hope, quite honestly, by the end of this interview, that people feel that we vaguely know what we're doing, because we do.
Well, you might know that we started the hotel quarantine system on Friday because of concerns about variants, as we've been talking about. But is that system of mandatory hotel quarantine, is it effective if there's only 33 countries on the list? I mean, should or do you think all incoming passengers at this point in time be quarantining in hotels on arrival?
It's a decision, of course, for each government how they propose to do this. But if we look at what's happening in East Asia and the Pacific, which are parts of the world where people are being super careful about this virus, they have opted for widespread quarantining with very, very few exceptions. And I'm of the opinion that stringent approaches to quarantining are necessary, even though it makes life so awful for the majority of us who just want to slip across and see our relatives and so on. But, you know, that's where I'm headed at the moment, is you've got to be stringent and robust to get on top of this thing. So I, when I'm advising, I tend to say, err on the side of caution when it comes to quarantine. Most people should be going into quarantine when they arrive.
Okay. Easter holidays have just started, the school holidays in Ireland, and the government here has confirmed that we're going to see a full return of pupils from the 12th of April. But I just wanted to ask you about school children and the B117 variant, which is dominant here now. Do we know if schools are contributing to case rises?
I keep asking my colleagues to give me absolute precision on this, and we don't have the answer yet. But we, you know, what we believe, and it's the hypothesis on which we're all working, is that there is a lot of movement of the virus, including this particular variant you're talking about, in schools. And so although the kids aren't getting ill, they do pass the virus around. And so that means we should expect to see a bump up in cases and some spikes with schools opening. And the big question will be how well we're able to stop these spikes developing into surges and outbreaks. And we'll see that in the coming few weeks. But I expect to see some increase, Claire. Yep.
Do you believe the benefit of getting children back to school, that simply outweighs the risk of transmission associated with it?
All of these things, as you identify, are really, really difficult issues for government. If I was in government right now, I think I'd be in that group that said we need to do everything possible to get kids back. We need to do everything possible to make sure that schools can function. We need to do everything possible so that when there are clusters that build up in schools, we've got clear protocols for how we deal with them. And we've got to be able to learn all the time about the best protocol for the community. Mm-hmm. I think that would be my position. But also, I think, because of knowing some of your key officials who I'm really very impressed by, I think you've got people in the government in Ireland, both at the central level and at local authority level, who are looking at this really hard. So I think you're doing it right.
Dr. David Nabarro, good to talk to you as always. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Claire.
Bye-bye.